Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is all of it. What was the last thing you bought online? Did you do it because it was something you needed? Or were you tempted by some amazing discount? Vanessa Friedman, the New York Times fashion director and chief fashion critic, noticed a change in her inbox as the COVID-19 pandemic was beginning to have an impact on the retail and fashion industry. As she writes in a piece, emails have been landing in my inbox. New sale markdowns. Enjoy an additional 20% off. Flash 40% off sale. Discomforting and tempting. Catnip to boredom and cabin fever. For consumers, now online more than ever, shopping seems like an escape, maybe a form of retail therapy, or a way to get things without having to go into a store so that you can maintain social distancing. But for all the joy a new pair of comfy sweatpants or a new Instapot might bring, there's a cost. But on the flip side, online shopping could help a young business survive. Friedman recently wrote a piece that asked the question, should we still go shopping online? It reflects on the economic and moral issues that consumers face during this time. And Friedman doesn't really answer the question yes or no, but rather ends the piece, sometimes a fleece is only a fleece, and sometimes it can be a creative rescue line and a bet on the future. Vanessa Friedman is my guest today. Vanessa, thanks for joining us on All of It.
It's nice to be with you.
And if you want to share your thoughts on online shopping, we tweeted out Vanessa's piece. It's at All of It WNYC. If you want to respond to the tweet, at All of It WNYC. Before we talk about what's been happening, let's talk about where we were before all this started. What was the state of retail going into this crisis? Let's say a month and a half ago.
Well, I mean, what you have to remember is that this is, you know, we're right at the verge of spring. So a whole influx of new inventory was just landing in stores, online. And, you know, this would normally be the time of year when you would be getting emails that are like, oh, you know, get this cute new top, get this new Coachella, you know, festival outfit. And people would be kind of cleaning out their closets and thinking about what was next. So there would be a kind of surge of shopping. And I think a lot of places were preparing for that. And what they now have is a lot of product and know where to sell it.
You know, not all retail is the same, obviously. When it comes to clothing and fashion, which groups would you say are the most vulnerable right now?
Honestly, everyone is. I mean, the department stores are having a terrible time. You know, most specialty boutiques, which are the kind of one-off stores where the retailers might have a really personal relationship with their customers, tend not to have a lot of e-commerce. They're shut, so they have no way of moving their product. They also tend to be the stores that support new designers, you know, who are their first kind of outlets. And so these new designers now have nowhere to sell their products. Many of them don't have their own e-commerce sites, so they have no way to kind of get their inventory moving, which is what gives them the cash to even be able to produce the next collection. I mean, fashion is a peculiarly seasonal industry, and often all of these different parts of the supply chain, all the way down to the garment workers, you know, in faraway countries like Bangladesh and India and Malaysia, you know, they're all really living from cycle to cycle, and they produce clothes, they send them to stores, the stores will then pay them for what they have already produced, but they have to front the money in the, you know, in the beginning, and then they sell it to customers. So in a funny way, the cash flow runs backwards at the moment because there is no cash flow coming in the normal retail cycle. Many of them are facing, you know, really dire situations, you know, including bankruptcy. And as I said, that like that goes all the way back to the people in the factories in Asia, you know, as well as the store down the corner, as well as, you know, Nordstrom's, which employs thousands and thousands of people.
My guest is Vanessa Friedman, fashion director and chief fashion critic from the New York Times. We're talking about her piece, Should We Still Go Shopping Online? So as you mentioned in your piece, a lot of people are receiving all of these emails from stores about sales and discounts. You write about it in your piece. So as a consumer, it might seem great, but from your perspective as someone who knows the business, why is it alarming to see this flood of sales emails?
Nothing should be on sale now except for winter clothing. You know, and if you look at what's on sale, it's everything that's just come in. So it's really, you know, stores are so desperate to create any sort of cash flow that they're essentially discounting new merchandise. And what that should say to a consumer on the other end is, like, they're desperate because they have absolutely no money coming in, which means they can't pay their employees, who they've probably furloughed. They can't pay the designers whose goods they've bought. And they can't pay the garment workers whose who have made their collections. So it's actually those kind of discounts at this time of year are a really scary sign. And, you know, they take me back to 2008 and to 2001, to post 9/11, because those are the last two times when at a time of year when we all should have been, like, really excited about buying new products, in fact, discounts signaled something that was really a huge problem with the economy.
You mentioned post 9/11, and these are not the same at all. But from remembering back to that time, was there something mm-hmm. that retailers and consumers did that helped save industries, the retail industry?
Well, retailers put everything on very deep discount, and consumers bought it, but that was actually not necessarily a good thing. I mean, as you said, the situation was very, very different, but, you know, that was pre-Christmas time. It was pre-holiday time, which was a time that normally things would not have been on sale. And because department stores were so concerned about, you know, consumers' sentiment, they put things on deep discount. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, something that both Mayor Giuliani at the time and President Bush said, which is that by shopping, people were essentially gesturing toward normal life. You know, we're essentially saying, I am not going to be scared into staying in my house, but I am going to go out and do something that is about getting back to the way things were, that is a vote for, you know, happiness and joy. And, you know, clearly we can't do that physically now, but we can do it virtually. And I guess in some ways, you know, this is a question of motivation for buying things. You know, you can think about shopping as self-indulgence and frivolity, or you can think about it as a gesture about, you know, toward the future and toward a time when, you know, we will have these businesses survive and we will need to go out and see each other again, and we want to support that possibility.
That, and I wanted to ask you about that. Is there an upside or a way that we as consumers can spend our money effectively online? Is the idea to go to, you know, this is TMI, but one of my New Year's resolutions was not to buy any more clothes online for 6 months because I had a closet full and I was going to shop my closet, and I've kept up on it. But I do have a friend who's a designer in Oakland whose clothes I love, and she sent out an email saying, like, hey, I'm keeping my team busy sewing masks, but if you're thinking about getting that dress, get it now. And I thought to myself, maybe I should buy that dress. Maybe I should help keep a small designer afloat.
I cannot tell you how many small designers have said to me that their lifeline is their e-commerce site, and that if they can sell, you know, one thing a day, and obviously this depends on the price point, you know, one designer said, if I can sell a couple, like, pot holders every day, you know, that will get me over the hump until, you know, things regularize. I'll be able to pay my two employees and my rent. You know, for other people, it might be like if they can sell one much more expensive dress every couple days. But I think, you know, for a consumer, it's really a question of who you want your money to go to. You know, is it the independent designer, you know, who is maybe the creative lifeblood of, you know, of an industry? Is it a garment worker in Bangladesh who, you know, who needs to keep their factory going? But I think that what's important is that when we make our purchasing decisions, we make them consciously, and we think about, you know, where this is, you know, where the end product is going. Where the money is going.
Yeah, you write in your piece that the issue of labor can't be ignored. You wrote that work-from-home loungewear that is being dangled so temptingly, so surprisingly affordably before your screen-weary eyes, those sweats and sneakers, the potholder, they represent labor and ideas. not just stuff. Mm-hmm. How does the issue of labor become overlooked for a lot of people?
I just think, you know, most of us tend to focus on the brand name. So we say, oh, we're buying this from H&M, we're buying it from Zara. But, you know, we don't think that if you follow the sort of production, the supply chain back, you know, all of those really cheap items are, you know, created by hundreds, thousands of people in faraway factories whose livelihoods are dependent on the creation of those garments and the selling of those garments. And, you know, we see that happening now, you know, as a lot of big brands have canceled their orders because they don't want new inventory coming in until they can get rid of what they have. You know, it's created a huge crisis in the developing world because factories that are completely dependent on those orders aren't being paid. And, you know, some of the brands such as H&M and I believe Zara now have sworn that if they have actually already ordered products, they will in fact pay for them, mostly after a public outcry. But there is no obligation necessarily. And so, you know, it's a very tricky situation.
My guest is Vanessa Friedman. She's fashion director and chief fashion critic for the New York Times. We're talking about shopping online. Should we, how can we ethically during this time? But you wrote another piece that was quite interesting and from a different angle titled, Will We Lose a Generation of Designers? Mm-hmm. How does this crisis set us up to possibly lose a generation of designers?
Well, I think, I mean, the two pieces are related because, you know, if you are a young new designer, say, you know, someone like Christopher John Rogers, who won the Vogue CFDA Fashion Fund just last Christmas, or Bathsheba Hay, you know, one of these names that is a kind of bright light of the future, you have maybe 3 to 10 to 50 stores that are, you know, your way of getting your product out into the world. But if the stores, so as I said, the way this cycle works, which is so peculiar, is that the stores will order from a designer. The designer then pays to produce the store's order, sends it to the store, and then the store pays the designer.
Wow.
Now, at the moment, designers have taken orders for what would be pre-fall, which would normally come in around May, with fashion strains nomenclature, and also often for fall, which would come in around August. They have started production or finished production on some of that, and the stores don't want it because the stores can't even move the spring stuff. So they're essentially in debt. Wow. Sitting there with products that they can't sell, and none of them have cash reserves to be able to pay for that. And in fact, you know, even big companies like Ralph Lauren and Michael Kors, you know, barely have cash reserves to pay for things like that. And you can see it because they're all furloughing their staff. So we're, you know, in this impossible situation where if you are a standalone designer with two employees, you have no way to pay your rent, to pay your employees, to make your products, to pay your factories, to buy materials for the next season so stores can make orders. And, you know, and a lot of them can't really find their way through the Small Business Administration loans. There are now loans coming from the fashion community itself with the CFDA and Vogue raising money for special grants, but that money won't get to them probably until June. And a lot of them don't even know if they can last until June.
Are there ways that someone listening to this right now that they can shop ethically during this time, shop with these people in mind? Is there a certain thing you should keep? Should you go directly to the website? Should you go to one of the sites that takes away the middleman? What's a good way to think about this if you think, yep, you know, I'm going to spend some money and try to help someone?
Well, I think definitely I would look for a designer's own website. So, for example, if you were looking at you know, a Nordstrom site and you saw a piece by Jonathan Cohen and you thought, oh, I really like that. Maybe see if Jonathan Cohen has his own direct-to-consumer website and then buy it from there because, you know, the money will go directly to him and to his, like, three employees. If it's something that's in a specialty boutique, as I said, like specialty boutiques, which often are standalone stores, you know, are the sort of first port of call for new designers or for more conceptual designers, and they are the kind of gateway for them to the consumer. So to support a specialty store, again, you're supporting a really crucial part of the fashion supply chain, and I think a really crucial part of what, you know, makes American fashion exciting, and often is filtered down to the high street. So they're kind of the front line of this. And then afterwards, maybe go to the department stores. You know, certainly the big retailers like Amazon, like Walmart, like Target are, because they provide so many essential services at the moment, are experiencing something of a boon. So maybe if you're going to buy something you could get somewhere else as easily, you know, spread that around a bit so that, you know, the broader economy is bolstered a little bit.
You've given us a lot to think about. Vanessa Friedman from the New York Times, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Nice to talk to you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.